former Vice President Joseph R. Biden is projected to win the state of Pennsylvania and will become the 46th President of the United States.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
How did we get here?
It's legal for them to count votes in Pennsylvania 2 days after the election on November 3rd?
Yes.
You're wrong. Go. I don't even want to talk to you.
We're counting ballots as a battle between good and evil.
This is now our greatest fight since the Civil War. The battle of righteousness versus Satan.
For the Wuhan outbreak, Bill Gates did this.
Where science is met with righteous ignorance.
You literally cannot mandate somebody to wear a mask knowing that that mask is killing people. It literally is killing people.
Where Americans are so divided, we can't agree on fundamental truths. This is a legacy of decades of lies by the richest and most powerful members of our society. Lies to mask the real threats.
Put your masks on. Don't go out if you don't have to.
Lies to justify putting Americans in harm's way. Lies designed to enrich and protect those in power while the rest of us die. For over 70 years, our leaders have told us one thing under the bright lights.
The protection of the lives and property of Americans is the responsibility of all public officials.
I care. We're trying.
And it is my first duty as president to protect the American people.
We have it so well under control.
But America's shadow government has spent trillions of dollars on secret plans that serve one premise. When the shit really hits the fan, we're on our own.
I have nothing, nothing.
And while the government sold us lie after lie, now truth itself is under attack.
I'm cowering down to evil. We're Americans.
That signal means to stop whatever you are doing and get to the nearest safe place fast.
During the Cuban Missile Crisis, my high school had an air raid drill, and only the headmaster knew it was a drill, so it was pretty dramatic. I could tell the teachers were scared. There had just been a speech by the president saying we might go to war.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring a full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union.
And so we did what we were supposed to do. We went into the basement of the high school, turned away from any windows, any glass, and prepared for the blast to occur. I thought, there's a chance it's real, and I don't really want to die in my high school basement. So can I make it if I bolt? Can I make it to the subway? And can I make it home in time? And I did the math. And I couldn't, and there was no way I could get home on the subway in half an hour. So at 12 years old, I was deciding where I wanted to die during a nuclear war.
Your survival chances against dangerous fallout are excellent if you take suitable shelter.
As the Cold War reaches a boiling point in the Cuban Missile Crisis, Richard Clark and his classmates are fed a double dose of terror and deception.
An attack could come without warning.
Sold on the fear of an imminent Soviet attack and the lie that citizens in American cities could survive a direct hit. By the early 60s, the advent of thermonuclear warheads up to 1,000 times more powerful than the bomb dropped on Hiroshima means civil defense drills are becoming increasingly meaningless.
This was a massive, massive propaganda effort that bore almost no relationship to reality whatsoever.
In a pinch, dig a foxhole and make a cover of branches or board. Don't let radioactive dust touch your skin.
There was something called Operation Alert that would happen every year. Everyone would have to find shelter, and it was all done to persuade people there was something they could do. that they could be active, that they would be okay, they would be safe.
And while Americans are distracted by civil defense drills, the government and military contractors get busy acquiring the real power and wealth that comes from manufacturing tens of thousands of nuclear weapons and the missiles, submarines, and bombers to deliver them.
And all these civil defense programs were really a form of emotional management. It was to maintain support for our nuclear weapon strategy and programs.
The deception goes deeper into the secret, massive underground complexes built to actually withstand a nuclear apocalypse. Facilities meant only for America's most powerful, those at the highest reaches of government. The workers who maintain the bunkers are told their families will be safe back home in their basement shelters, so they'll follow orders even though their loved ones will be left out on their own when the bombs drop.
One of the things that bothered me about this whole process was that we had planned out what you'd need in the facility. It had to have water, it had to have beds, it had to have food. But at some point, someone needed to have thought through, are these people going to be fully attentive to the very trying jobs they're going to be asked to do if their families are under the fallout cloud?
Even President Eisenhower came to believe that if there were ever a nuclear war, millions would die, even with civil defense planning.
President Eisenhower knew privately that this was all bullshit. In the Eisenhower era, there was a phrase that was used to describe what would be after a nuclear attack, and the phrase was a smoking, radiating ruin.
But for Eisenhower, it wasn't just nuclear war. It was the arms race itself that was leading to the rise of something that could threaten American democracy. So in his farewell address,
we have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions.
Ike says the quiet part out loud, that Cold War planning is secretly transferring previously unimaginable power into a very few hands, all unaccountable to the people.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
But we do. The newly formed Central Intelligence Agency is tasked with containing and rolling back communist expansion. But despite Eisenhower's warnings, the CIA will often act as the secret army of the military-industrial complex, using any means necessary. This top-secret CIA report lays out the plan. Commence aggressive covert operations across the globe, in which the rules of normal human conduct don't apply. War would now be fought in the shadows. The CIA teams up with drug traffickers, torturers, murderers. Often their operations end up serving America's corporate interests and undermining democracy. The CIA orchestrates coups and assassinations in Guatemala to protect the United Fruit Company and in defense of big oil in Iran and Indonesia. While Norman Rockwell paints Boy Scouts as the essence of America's decency and democracy, America's shadow warriors leave the streets of the so-called Third World red with blood.
It corroded the soul of America in totality. It led to a situation where the idea of freedom and liberty and human dignity was cast aside in the pursuit of power and influence.
And yet, for the elite to maintain control, it's crucial Americans are considered the good guys. So deception is essential. Cold War strategist Hans Morgenthau calls this schizophrenic reality the dual state, a democratic state that operates in the open, and an amoral security state which exercises secret control and a veto over democracy itself.
We know that the American government has engaged in the covert overthrow of democratically elected leaders across the world. We know that the government has engaged in the forced sterilization of prisoners, medical experimentation on children in state care. CIA agents setting up brothels in San Francisco to test the effects of acid and other drugs on unsuspecting Johns.
The CIA tries to bury the dirty tricks under a blanket of lies and engages in a massive project to influence popular culture. The agency places editors at major newspapers across Western Europe and secretly funds prominent literary magazines in Europe and Latin America. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Ernest Hemingway, and even James Baldwin are unwittingly writing on behalf of America's shadow government. Major European exhibitions of America's most famous artists are secretly funded by American spies. The world's arts and culture becomes a PSYOP's battleground. Back home, it's the FBI's mission to preserve the rigid social order that protects America's ruling class. The Bureau spies not only on communists, but on activists of all kinds, and even rock stars. Sometimes they're blackmailed and even killed by police.
COINTELPRO, started by the FBI in 1956. Its first targets are American communists, the American Communist Party, and then very quickly added into that are African American civil rights organizations. J. Edgar Hoover picks out Martin Luther King to infiltrate and disrupt the efforts of the civil rights movement.
The Vietnam War is the military-industrial elite's most extensive project. And it's built upon two fictions, that Southeast Asia is essential to American security, and that we're defending the Vietnamese people.
After almost 3 weeks of some of the war's toughest fighting, the end is in sight.
The war has been raging for years when a top-secret Pentagon report is leaked, revealing perhaps the biggest and certainly the deadliest lie. Few of the military planners actually believe the war can be won. But the war won't end for 4 more years. And when it does, the U.S. will have lost.
We paid the price of 58,000 dead American servicemen and women, with hundreds of thousands wounded and with PTSD, with nations in Southeast Asia destroyed.
And along with the many dead, many Americans' confidence in their government begins to die as well. The loss of trust leads to a flourishing of conspiracy theories about the JFK assassination, Area 51, even the moon landing.
A plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
These remain fringe ideas. But a quarter of a century after the Vietnam War ends, there'll be a chance to unify the country and win back the trust of the American people.
For whatever reason, and there are lots of theories about why, the Bush administration was intent on invading and occupying Iraq, even though it had nothing to do with the war on terrorism.
I was at a shooting range in San Diego, and I was at one end of the range, and these two Saudis were at the other end of the range. And they had a .22 caliber silver pistol. And I'm shooting my gun with aimed fire slowly. I hear this pistol go bang, 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 bang. I thought, who's down there? Who's the idiot who's just shooting that pistol like a machine gun? After the 9/11 hijackings, I looked at the images, and I realized they were the hijackers in the San Diego cell.
Former intelligence officer Malcolm Nance believes the 9/11 hijackers were able to infiltrate America so easily because of where they came from.
It showed that they could come to the United States, operate like the Saudis, and that green passport would give us an elite blind spot. Because when we think of Saudi Arabians, we think of money. Very, very large, vast amounts of Gulf state oil money. And that is the blind spot that allows people to exploit our system.
10 months after Nance's sighting, Americans are united in their horror and grief, and quickly realize that despite the trillions invested in protecting the nation, those defenses have failed, notably in the months leading up to the 9/11 attack.
We began to receive lots of intelligence indications that there was going to be a major terrorist strike by Al-Qaeda, by bin Laden's organization, against the United States.
On 9/11, Richard Clark is working in the White House. His job, advise the president about terrorist threats.
The Bush administration did very little in response to that intelligence, despite the CIA director telling him repeatedly that there was a major attack coming, despite my warnings. The Bush administration didn't try to find Al-Qaeda people in the United States, didn't ask all the agencies to do their maximum, didn't try to preempt the attack by going after bin Laden in Afghanistan.
Why Clark's warnings to Bush were ignored has never fully been explained, but some believe it had to do with the fact that 15 of the 19 hijackers came from one country, America's oil-rich ally, Saudi Arabia. For years, the Saudi royals had been playing a dangerous game, funding a strain of radical Islam that inspired the son of one of the country's richest construction tycoons to become a terrorist leader, while cozying up to powerful American political dynasties like the Bushes, an oil family that produced two presidents.
The Saudis have always wanted a president who could play by their rules. Let's just keep pumping oil, let's get things stable.
By some estimates, over the decades, the Saudis move over $1 billion to the Bush family and its allied companies and institutions.
These people essentially are Bond villains who are running countries. They don't believe in democracy. And bin Laden knew Saudi Arabians were treated well in the United States and they could just walk right into the country and learn whatever they wanted, and the Americans would worship them.
After 9/11, rather than allow an open investigation, the Bush White House demands the congressional committees redact 28 pages of their 9/11 report related to the question of whether the Saudi government was involved in the attacks. When the pages are finally released in 2012, they detail extensive links between men the FBI thinks could be Saudi intelligence officers and the hijackers, including the two men Nance saw in San Diego. But the report stops short of finding conclusive proof of a connection between the Saudi government and 9/11. And rather than own up to the immense intelligence failure that allowed 9/11 to happen, the Bush administration executes what is perhaps the 21st century's greatest feat of misdirection. They shift blame from the actual perpetrator to a completely unrelated target, Iraq's leader, Saddam Hussein.
George W. Bush was guided by George Herbert Walker Bush's defense secretary, Dick Cheney. They wanted to liberate Iraq for the sake of liberating the oil, which would assist the Saudis, not liberate Iraq for the sake of liberating Iraqis.
And just as it had with Vietnam, the government creates the illusion that vital American interests are at stake and goes further, suggesting that Iraq is a dire threat to the United States. One of the most trusted figures in American society is rolled out to level the accusation that Iraq has been hiding weapons of mass destruction and is prepared to use them.
The facts and Iraq's behavior show that Saddam Hussein and his regime are concealing their efforts to produce more weapons of mass destruction.
And in addition to the threat, Americans are told that the Iraqi people want us to invade their country.
Do you think the American people are prepared for a long, costly and bloody battle?
I don't think it's likely to unfold that way, Tim, because I really do believe we will be greeted as liberators.
But these are lies on a massive scale and will lead to countless deaths and kill faith in government for a new generation of Americans.
Iraq had nothing to do with the attack on 9/11. But for whatever reason, and there are lots of theories about why, the Bush administration was intent on invading and occupying Iraq, even though it had nothing to do with the war on terrorism.
As the U.S. rolls into Iraq, weapons of mass destruction are never found, and another false promise is exposed. Instead of being greeted as liberators, American soldiers are seen as an occupying army.
We moved hundreds of thousands of American targets closer to people with guns and bombs who could have terrorist attacks against them. And that's what happened in Iraq.
You had a political leadership that was largely dominated by chicken hawks, people who had never served themselves. They're sending other people's kids off to war. They're not sending their own kids.
The Saudi oil ties, the intelligence failure, the inability to find weapons of mass destruction. Some take these strands and weave a wild conspiracy theory that Bush and his cronies orchestrated 9/11 to justify the Iraq invasion.
September 11th was not just a terrible tragedy that took the lives of thousands of innocent people. It was a violent and aggressive seizure of power and a transformation of both foreign and domestic policy. It was an American coup.
Despite a mountain of evidence to the contrary, the 9/11 conspiracy theorists make the bizarre claim that no planes were actually hijacked, and it was planted bombs that destroyed the Pentagon and Trade Center. Not seeing the irony, they would call themselves 9/11 truthers. What had been only on the fringes is now a new kind of movement. People who believe everything they're being told by authority is a lie.
It was the head of CIA, FBI, Homeland Security building.
Their views are amplified by the internet and seep into the mainstream.
The Tower 7 one is the weirdest one of all. Because when you watch that one, that was like, why does that collapse like that?
Yeah.
Like, it's just strange.
And I'm sure you've seen the BBC reporter who is speaking on camera, and World Trade Center 7 is behind her, and she says, World Trade Center 7 has just fallen. It has fallen, it is the third building, and it's still standing.
The truther's delusion paints the attack as a false flag, a covert government op designed to look like the work of someone else. And suddenly, false flags are seen everywhere.
Can you imagine being a parent of a little child who saw this scene that you're looking at right now?
In a grotesque twist, even school shootings are labeled hoaxes perpetrated by the government to justify taking away Americans' guns.
This is not just the 17 poor, dead young people that had their lives taken from them. This is the globalist crime syndicate that has funded the radical Islamic takeover of North Africa and much of the Middle East.
The price is high. Instead of trying to figure out how to avoid future tragedies, we're drawn into a debate over paranoid fantasies.
Do you see the 666 right here? Do you see all of the subliminal messages?
Now, anything is possible. Like the racist falsehood that the Hawaiian-born African-American president was really born in Kenya.
Barack Obama has usurped the presidency, and in so doing is now on the fast track to destroy America.
Into the sea of suspicion and doubt, fueled in part by decades of government lies, wades a real estate mogul and reality TV star who becomes the champion of the Obama birther movement.
I think it's a terrible pall that's hanging over him. He should show his birth certificate.
And again, Americans are distracted from real political debates about real problems, like growing economic inequality as the country struggles to recover from the 2008 recession. And when Donald Trump runs for president himself, he leverages the mistrust accrued from the falsehoods of Democrats and Republicans alike.
They lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction, there were none, and they knew there were none.
Trump goes further, enrobing himself in aggrievement, the sense not only that American greatness has been lost, but that it's been stolen.
The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country.
And shortly after Trump becomes president, in a dark corner of the internet, another online conspiracy erupts, with Trump at the center. The savior, battling a cabal inside government. The dual state is rebranded the deep state, and Trump discovers that decades of lies and mistrust can be very useful indeed.
It's not that surprising, because if you actually believe the theories that are espoused by QAnon as reality, they would probably warrant some pretty dramatic responses.
I want to tell you that this marks the start of the second American Revolution.
Decades of Cold War, living on a constant war footing, under the looming cloud of seemingly imminent nuclear annihilation. All of it has a profound effect on the American mind.
America is going under leftist martial law, and if the communist Chinese agent, Joe Biden, is able to get in there, he will put America under permanent lockdown siege until we're brought to our knees.
Tell it!
In the last 50 years, we've pretty much always existed at the brink of some kind of existential threat, usually a self-made one, you know, often a military aggression. And so in those times, people develop belief systems that help them cope, help them maintain. And one of those is to tell yourself that, you know, you are part of a battle between good and evil, and that ultimately good will prevail.
Of one university is one communist too many.
During the Cold War, the government masters the art of misdirection, the damage control when official lies come to light, blame the Soviets and other internal enemies.
Every war that we've ever lost, every pandemic that we have failed to fight, it is somehow or another the result of traitors.
In the 80s, Rambo embodies the country's rage over the lies and the loss of Vietnam. But he transfers blame from the government that orchestrated the war to the protesters who opposed it.
But somebody wouldn't let us win. Then I come back to the world, and I see all those maggots at the airport protesting me, spitting, calling me baby killer and all kinds of foul crap.
It's a result of columns within the country who are obsessed with destroying America. They are themselves evil. And so when you start believing in these conspiracy theories, you come to believe that America itself has been infected with corruption and traitors and evil so much that democracy is untenable.
Fueled partly by the mistrust that comes with decades of government lies, conspiracy movements proliferate after 9/11. And in Donald Trump, they have found their champion. Even a Fox News ally wonders if he's gone off the rails.
Who do you think is pulling Biden's strings? Is it former Obama officials?
People that you've never heard of. People that are in the dark shadows, people that...
Oh, what does that mean? That sounds like conspiracy theory, dark shadows.
No, people that you haven't heard of. They're people that are on the streets. They're people that are controlling the streets.
The most extreme conspiracy movement, which gains by far the most followers, is called QAnon. It begins with a series of posts on an internet bulletin board, starting in October 2017.
This mysterious person who called themselves Q was claiming that Donald Trump was engaged in a secret war against a variety of enemies, mostly members of the so-called deep state, and that soon Donald Trump's enemies would be arrested or put to death.
Are you kidding me? We will not cower down to evil. We're Americans.
QAnon is a far-right conspiracy based on blood libel, which is an ancient anti-Semitic concept that Jewish people are eating Christian babies. In this case, they've changed that a little bit.
QAnon's version of the blood libel has Donald Trump at war with a deep state cabal that's abducting children and drinking their blood. The satanic group is vast and includes Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden. Billionaires George Soros and Bill Gates, and even entertainers like Tom Hanks, Ellen, and Oprah Winfrey.
The first event predicted by Q, claiming that Hillary Clinton was going to be arrested within 48 hours of the post. That was obviously false, but this did not stop QAnon in any way.
People who believe the disinformation, misinformation that they are promulgating, we've seen will do some pretty extreme things. And it's not that surprising, because if you actually believe the theories that are espoused by QAnon as reality, then they would probably warrant some pretty dramatic responses.
Since that first post in 2017, purveyors of the patently false QAnon conspiracy theory have attracted millions of new adherents, with online videos full of quasi-religious prophecies about a coming storm and a great awakening.
What if I told you it was done on purpose? What if I told you that those who were corrupting the world, poisoning our food, and igniting conflict were themselves about to be permanently eradicated from the earth?
As the conspiracy cult grows, its narrative expands with increasingly outlandish claims.
One person claims that there are 20,000 children being kept beneath the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. Another claims instead that these quote-unquote mole children are being held beneath Central Park. QAnon believers take typos and even the act of the president drinking a bottle of Fiji water as messages that are coded and being sent to them across the airwaves for them to figure out on their own time.
The QAnon lie about a deep state cabal is the legacy of decades of official lies. At the same time, QAnon serves the purposes of the current government elite. If you paint your opponents as Satan-worshipping drinkers of children's blood, any action against them is justified.
Then we end up in an every man for himself, survival of the fittest kind of prepper jungle, right? It's a way of bringing about the apocalypse now. That's why they call it the Great Awakening. They want to bring it on. Let's get there.
Even when Trump is no longer president, the post-truth world may be his legacy, thanks in part to decades of lies by leaders before him. And without a set of truths to unite us, we may remain divided and find that stamping out hateful conspiracies is like fighting shadows.
The Cold War was the first time that the American intelligence state launched into a full-scale psychological operation designed to modify human behavior and human reaction to American power. The result of this large-scale psychological operation is QAnon. In a way, we developed an AI that we thought would fight our enemy, but it came back home and consumed us.
USA! USA! USA!
We have forgotten what to expect from a president, especially in moments of disaster, and we are neck deep in it.
How do I characterize 2020?
A horror story. Plain and simple.
It seems like everything just keeps getting worse, just worse and worse all the time.
2020 is the year disaster has struck and threatens Americans in every part of the country. And not only have the nation's defenses proved inadequate, the president hasn't even pretended to protect us.
It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
The stress test for the system, and we have largely failed it.
We really reached a kind of maximum brittleness as a society.
The lie that the government is there to defend us is laid bare. Other falsehoods designed to reinforce the president's power accelerate.
2020 is bad. The only question is, will 2021 be worse?
The way that Donald Trump has faced the pandemic, or failed to face the pandemic, is the greatest national security blunder we've ever seen in American history. It dwarfs Vietnam. It dwarfs the Iraq War. It's killing our citizens. It's occupying our military. It's eroding our economy. The pandemic is hurting America in ways that Osama bin Laden could have only dreamed of.
as the pandemic first bears down on the country.
The Democrats want us to fail so badly.
Donald Trump sees the virus as a political ploy by Democrats.
And this is their new hoax.
And when COVID spread is impossible to ignore, Trump attempts to gaslight the nation with false optimism.
Now, the virus that we're talking about having to do, you know, a lot of people think that goes away in April with the heat, as the heat comes in. Typically, that will go away in April. We're in great shape then.
But the U.S. is in the worst shape. Could a reason we make up only 4% of the world's population but account for over 20% of the deaths be that so many Americans don't trust authority, the legacy of decades of government lies?
All of Trump's assurances about the coronavirus going away and that it's just going to disappear and we're all going to be just fine, I think those efforts are propaganda. They're very similar to the Eisenhower-era propaganda that, you know, we can survive a nuclear war, you know, if you just get in your basement. If you just have detergent down there, you can scrub off the radioactive fallout and your family could be okay.
Behind closed doors, in conversations with author Bob Woodward, as the virus first begins to spread, Trump shows he understands how deadly the threat is.
It goes through air, Bob. That's always tougher than the touch. It's also more deadly than even your strenuous flus. This is deadly stuff. It's not just older.
Yeah, exactly.
To plenty of young people.
Meanwhile, misinformation creeps into the mainstream. QAnon followers claim the pandemic is an elaborate ruse to increase authoritarian control over their lives and to undermine their fearless leader.
The COVID hoax was in the works years before the election of Donald Trump, but they started fast-tracking it.
As Trump pretends that America has turned a corner, he holds large in-person rallies.
I hear from your two great senators, your new governor, that we're doing very well in Oklahoma. That's the word.
Super spreader events that a Stanford study finds have led, at the time, to more than 30,000 infections and over 700 deaths.
President Trump was ridiculing the notion of people wearing masks. You see, is a pathological, almost sociopathic, lack of compassion for other people, not just the American people as a whole, but for the people he works with in his own administration.
When Trump contracts COVID himself, he receives care unavailable to virtually any other American. Yet he takes his recovery as proof that taking steps to avoid COVID is somehow a moral failure.
Don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it.
We have forgotten what to expect from a president. Especially in moments of disaster. And we are neck deep in it.
We're on our own. Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light.
But there's this illusion that there's someone in charge.
And then I see the disinfectant.
And that's the worst of both worlds.
And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning.
The coronavirus crisis is exposing failures even deeper than a president refusing to protect us. It reveals a mistrust of authority so profound that many won't wear the masks necessary to curb the outbreak. And it lays bare the government's inability to protect the vulnerable. As the country teeters on the abyss, we're witnessing a loss of faith in America itself.
I was in the Soviet Union when it collapsed back in 1992. And when I came back to the West, I was shocked by how complacent people were with this presumption that history only went in one direction. Because I've seen that history can go into reverse. And unfortunately, when that happens, it can be brutal.
Americans are starting to realize more and more that they don't have to be powerless. And we can start to build something real and true and human and reject this militarism of the Cold War.
The Rand Corporation, Palo Alto, 1950s. A psychological experiment is being conducted that will shape the shadow government's dark view of human nature. The experiment, which would guide America's Cold War military strategy, takes the form of a game.
Game theory was a burgeoning study that started with this game, Prisoner's Dilemma, in which two opponents took each other on with their moves hidden behind a structure.
Each prisoner has to decide whether to rat out the other guy in exchange for a lighter sentence. The way the game is structured, the safe thing to do is betray your fellow prisoner, because they may betray you.
The strategy was to always act in your own interest, to always act in bad faith. You had to always assume that your opponent was seeking to destroy you and was going to lie and not communicate or negotiate.
For the doomsday planners, game theory is embodied in the doctrine called mutually assured destruction, or MAD.
If the Russians try to nuke us, we're going to nuke them right back. Our bombs are on autopilot.
The 1964 film Dr. Strangelove parodies the insanity of mutual destruction with a so-called doomsday machine, that can't be stopped once it's triggered.
Doomsday machine? What is that?
A device which will destroy all human and animal life on Earth.
All human and animal?
Those guys, the opposites of us, the ideology that we hate, those guys are coming for us. The threat is out there, it's external.
But what if that threat isn't out there, but within our own society? In official lies and misinformation, in division, in the failure of our own leaders to protect us.
The opposite of mutually assured destruction is self-destruction. That's the path we're on now.
We are in the middle of something that I am not sure that we're gonna get out of. We are probably more divided than we've ever been in the United States. We're in the grip of a pretty devastating set of circumstances that are going to probably affect us for generations.
We're scared. And it's very difficult not to be. But what we can do is exercise our agency. We have to make our choices. We have to not only vote, but we also have to be active. We have to work essentially in the spirit of, you know, the late and great John Lewis to go out and make good and necessary trouble.
As America mourns and tears at itself, maybe there's one upside to the horrors of 2020. We're finally facing the legacy of lies that got us here.
As these things start to collapse, Americans are starting to realize more and more that they don't have to be powerless. They do not have to accept a world in which they have to sacrifice for the good of a state, particularly when the state doesn't hold up its end of the bargain. Americans are starting to wake up from this mythology that they have been taught and realize that power can come from grassroots organization and solidarity, and we can start to build something real and true and human and reject this militarism of the Cold War.
So what would real security look like? It would look like embracing the general welfare of the American people and the general welfare of the species. That would involve cutting all of this spending on warfare and surveillance and policing and redirecting it towards meeting human needs. And we need to be thinking about all fantasies of individual survival in the face of some sort of atomic apocalypse or environmental apocalypse are just that. They're fantasies and they have no basis in reality. I mean, we are, from our days as hunter-gatherers, to today, we are a group species. We're all totally dependent on each other. And if we can't see that, that's our greatest peril.